Philly is just, you know, changing my role, knowing I can give more, knowing I can do more. But if you want to be honest, like being on a leash and like me knowing in order for us to get where we want to get to, I was going to have to be playing my best offensively, whether it's facilitating and scoring the basketball, and Joel as well. And I never really, you know, had that opportunity. So I think all that plays into where I am today, where whatever T. Lou and the coaching staff needs me to do, you know, I've been prepared and been in both situations. When I'm in a leash, I'm not been just shooting the basketball every time. I meant like, I think the game and I'm a creator on the court. You know what I mean? So if I got a voice to where I can, hey coach, I see this, you know, what you think about this? Then it's like, oh, okay. Like somebody that trusts me, that believes in me, that understands me, that I'm just not a, you know, I'm not a system player. I am a system. You know what I mean? So, somebody that can have that dialogue with me and understand and move forward and figure out and make adjustments on the fly throughout the course of games. That's all I really care about. You know, I mean, it's not about me scoring a basketball, scoring 34 points. I've done it already. So that's what I meant by that.
Ladies and gentlemen, was your new Los Angeles Clipper, James Harden. And you guys heard it. He said, I am the system. I am the system. We're going to dive into all that, all right, in just a second, okay? Welcome on in, guys, to 94 Feet. It's your host, B.O.D., here with you. I know we're just here on Saturday, you know, but it's just been such an electrifying week. So many different things going on. And so, you know, let me hop on. It's Friday. You know what I mean? The weekend's right around the corner. First weekend of November coming. So let me hop on and share a couple of things with you guys. You know, we got a new World Series champion. We got coaches in the NFL getting fired. James Harden is a Clipper. So I said, you know, let me get on and just drop a couple of things here with you. And as always, you guys know I got something for you in the final segment of the show, the gold segment. So stick around for that. Stick around for that. As always, for all my new listeners out there, I encourage you guys to just hit that subscribe button. A lot of cool content we share on this show. All different kinds of sports, football, basketball, tennis, baseball. I'm trying to expand myself, guys, so definitely trying to get into more things. I don't know everything, but I'm open to learning. I'm open to stretching myself and going beyond my comfort zone. So here we go. Welcome on in, guys, to 94 Feet. As always, what's on my mind? We're going to jump right into it. James Harden. So James Harden this week, guys, was traded from the Philadelphia 76ers to the Los Angeles Clippers in exchange for Nicholas Batum, Marcus Morris, KJ Martin, which is Kenyon Martin's son. Kenyon Martin used to play for the Nuggets with Melo back in the day, and JR and AI. And the rest of it was draft picks. So first thing I say to myself is, all right, let's try to pick a winner in this exchange that happened here. To be honest with you, if I had to pick one, honestly, I didn't have one in the beginning, but if I had to pick one, I'm going to go with the Philadelphia 76ers. Okay, and the only reason why I say that is because I'm looking at the fact that they got rid of James Harden. Okay, so you got rid of the headache of the issue of what do we do with James? Is he coming? Is he not coming? That's over now. Okay, but if you're Philadelphia, you're not off so quick. Okay, don't relax too quick because now you got to figure out how do we keep a Joel Embiid happy. Like I said, Marcus Morris, Nicholas Batum, KJ Martin, and draft picks. You're not winning an NBA championship in June of 2024 with that roster currently constructed. Although good, and I give a lot of credit to Tyrese Maxey because the brother's coming out there putting up between 25 and 30 points a night. I think he's shooting above 50% from three. That's probably not going to last. We're only a couple games into the season. But even so, I give him his credit. He's been playing hard. Tobias Harris has stepped up. He's definitely getting a lot more touches. Obviously, you know, with the changes. There's no James Harden. Of course, other guys got to be able to produce. Embiid looks great. But again, I'm thinking back to the words we heard from Joel Embiid in July. He pretty much said, listen, I want to win a championship, whether it's here in Philadelphia or it's with somewhere else. So what is he trying to say? I'm open to going somewhere else and moving if I need to. We know Joel Embiid's health is up and down. It's funny, I listened to Stephen A. Smith on ESPN say Anthony Davis is a roller coaster. Well, Joel Embiid, you know, there's a couple of players we probably could apply that to in terms of their health, you know, and just their overall, you know, durability as it relates to the sport. I mean, Joel Embiid has always had issues with his back and his knees and different things of that nature. So, you know, it's The Sixers, they got the work in front of them. You got rid of Harden, but now you got to try to figure out what can we put together to keep our superstar here. So, congrats to Philly, but at the same time, don't relax too much. You still got work to do. Still got work to do. Coming on over to the Clippers, okay? You got Kawhi Leonard. You got Paul George. You have Russell Westbrook. You just brought in James Harden, along with PJ Tucker. I'm sorry, I forgot to include him as well. So, you got a role player out of it. You got James Harden. I'm not so worried about Kawhi Leonard, nor am I worried about Paul George. These are two of the greatest two-way players in the NBA today. Two-way players in terms of being able to play on the defensive end, on the offensive end. For those of you guys that are new listeners and don't understand that terminology. Them, I'm not as much worried about. These are guys that can create their own shot or have their shot created for them. I think both of them are better when they're creating their own shot, but, like I said, have the ability to kind of do both. So them, I'm not too worried about. Russell Westbrook has been exceptional since the day he walked in and became a Los Angeles Clipper at the end of last season. He has been amazing. So I give him his credit. My concern is Russell Westbrook and James Harden. Okay, now we know that this pairing wasn't as successful as they wanted to be as Houston Rockets. It wasn't a terrible pairing. I think that D'Antoni and the Rockets and PJ Tucker, Robert Covington, whoever else is on that team, I think, you know, they definitely figured out a couple things as the season waned, you know, and they traded their center. That was what sent Clint Capella to Atlanta with the Hawks. But, I mean, ultimately, it didn't glean what they wanted, which is a championship. They didn't make it past the second round. They got eliminated by the Lakers. I remember. I think they only won one game. I think they lost 5-1 in 2020. This is in the bubble down in Florida at the ESPN Sports Complex in Orlando, Florida. So, I mean, we've seen this pairing before. It didn't work out. So now we're putting them together again. And they're what? 2 to 3 years older. And you're talking about James Harden, who's a guy who needs the ball in his hand. You're talking about Russell Westbrook, who's a guy that needs the ball in his hand. Neither one of them are running off screens to come and catch and shoot. Both of them want the ball in their hand. Russell Westbrook wants to play up-tempo. Harden wants to play slower. So my thing is, how do you make that work? Now, if you ask me, I probably would have one of the two come off the bench. Honestly, I like what we got going so far. Harden, you the new guy. I'm going to have you come off the bench and play the second role. We only got one basketball. We only got one basketball. I always remember my dad always tells me about Greg Popovich. That when Manu Ginobili was there and Tony Parker and Tim Duncan, he told Manu, I'm going to have you come off the bench. We only got one ball. And that's what I say in this situation as well. I think it's very hard to play all four of these guys as starters and expect them to be productive on the floor at the same time. I don't see how you make that work without James Harden making a sacrifice. And my question is, how willing is he? You just heard the soundbite we played at the beginning of the show. He's talking about, you know, I don't do well working in the system. I am the system. That sounds like, to me, somebody who wants to be the focal point of an offense. I mean, I could be wrong, but that's my interpretation based off of what you just said. You know, and in the soundbite, there was other things he played. I'm only playing a minute of it. I think it's like 12 minutes long, guys. And you can stream it from YouTube. I'm going to have the link for you in the comments. There were some things he mentioned as well. He talked about, you know, respecting what the coach says. And, you know, he talked about feeling like Philadelphia kept him on a leash. They didn't let him be the complete player that he was. You know, he wasn't at 100% of the James Harden that he knew he could be, essentially is what he's trying to say. But my thing is, I listen to these comments from James Harden, and I say, I just don't know if those were some of the best words to use considering your history. People are looking at the fact that you forced your way out of Houston, you forced your way out of Brooklyn, you forced your way out of Philadelphia now, over to another team. So you've been to four different teams in the last 2 years, James Harden. You know, and it pretty much tell the people, listen, I am the system. I view myself as the focal point. I'm going to say the same thing I said in the last show. James Harden's got to remember, as you get older, even in the NBA, any older player in the NBA, the NBA doesn't need you now at this point. You need the NBA, okay? And I say that to say, you have to capitulate to what it is that the team needs that you're playing for. Because you have to understand, James Harden, what he brings to a team, yes, he's a great third or fourth option now, especially for what he could be to the Clippers if he cooperates. But what I'm trying to say is they can find somebody who can do just as much as you and maybe find somebody that can even pay less. Pay less, doing the same thing, bringing the same attributes that you would bring. My thing is you have to learn how to fit in where you can. I've heard other athletes talk about it as well. Sometimes you may be in college, you score 20 to 25 points a night, you get drafted into the NBA with a team that has two other superstars. you're not going to be getting those same touches you got in college, especially coming in as a rookie. You may only get 12 minutes to go out there and get 6 assists and 8 points. And that production is equivalent to the 20 to 25 you used to put up with 10 rebounds in college. You know what I'm saying? You got to get in and make your minutes count, whatever you can get in. And when my thing is, at James Harden, where he is in this point of his career, to be able to dictate and, you know, listen, I am the system and stuff, I just don't think that was the best use of words there, man. I don't think so. If like I said, if my understanding is correct, that he wants to be viewed as, you know, let me just kind of run out there and run my offense. I mean, because let's face it, this is pretty much what D'Antoni did. D'Antoni really didn't have a true offense set up. It was all five out, all guys who could shoot. It was threes and dunks. That was pretty much it. No mid-range. Threes and dunks. James Harden, isolation. This is what he spent many years under in his time in Houston. And my thing is, if you're trying to go back to that, good luck trying to tell that to head coach Ty Lue. Good luck trying to tell that to Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, because I don't think they're going to be down for that. You got to learn to fit in where you can, James Harden. That's what I'm looking at. So, the other thing I'm looking at here, going back to something I said in the last show, I told you guys I really wanted to know, what did Daryl Morey tell James Harden? I was saying James Harden needs to get on somebody's podcast and share, talk about what was said to him, so that way he would at least lessen the blows of what people were thinking about him prior to the news that came out Tuesday with his trade. Now I really want to know what did Daryl Morey say to James Harden. And the reason why I'm saying that is, let's look back to the fact when Kawhi Leonard wanted to leave the San Antonio Spurs. Kawhi Leonard was having issues, I think, with his health. I think it was with his knees or his back. He had issues with the San Antonio staff. They wanted him to play. They felt he was ready to play. He felt he wasn't ready yet. Blah, 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 blah. Ultimately, he tells the Spurs, send me to L.A. Or he gave a couple different options, the teams he wanted to be traded to. The Spurs looked at him and said, absolutely not. We will send you where we want to send you and where it best benefits us. And what did they do? They sent that man out the country. Out the country. They sent that man to the Toronto Raptors. Okay? Went there, won NBA Finals, becomes a free agent, signs with the Clippers at the end of the day. Finally ended up back in L.A. That's where he wanted to be. That's where he's from. I believe Kawhi Leonard was a Sun Devil. It's the Arizona State Sun Devil. So he's back on where he wants to be. What I'm trying to hit on is the fact that the Spurs did not agree to send Kawhi Leonard to where he wanted to go. They focused on what it is that they needed to do for themselves as an organization. James Harden told Daryl Morey, send me to the Clippers. I want to go to the Clippers. We know that they looked in the summer, couldn't get nothing done in the summer. Eventually said all trade conversations are closed right now, nothing we can get for him. At the end of the day, James Harden today is a Los Angeles Clipper. So my thing is, normally, like the Spurs, somebody would say, no, James Harden. I'm not going to just send you where it is you're going to go. We're going to go and get the best bang for our buck, for lack of a better term, for what we can get for you and what we're going to give up, whether that's with the Clippers or any other organization. But at the end of the day, Daryl Morey still sent him to the Clippers. So I'm looking at this and I'm saying to myself, is this a case of Daryl Morey saying, well, listen, I didn't come through and do what I needed to do for you before, so let me at least send you to where it is. The least I can do is send you to a team that you want to go to. Maybe this will help to lessen the fact that I didn't do what I told you I was going to do before. And again, I'm not saying that that's true, but that's my thought. You still sent him to where you wanted to go at the end of the day. Did you send him where you wanted to go to remove this dark cloud of the fact that, you know, maybe there were some promises made that you didn't come through under James Harden? That's my thing. You still sent him to where you wanted to go at the end of the day. So I really want to know, what did Daryl Morey tell James Harden? What had James Harden so upset? What led to James Harden being down in Japan, talking about Daryl Morey's a liar, never want to be a part of an organization he wants to play for? That's, now I'm really interested. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what comes out of that one, guys. Moving on, we have new MLB World Series winners, the Texas Rangers, securing their first World Series title in franchise history. I didn't get a chance to watch every game, so what I did is just kind of put together a brief outline here, guys, in all five games that took place. So the Rangers, they won 4-1. Game one lasted 11 innings. Ultimately, there was a walk-off home run by Adolis Garcia. That was game one. Game two, Diamondbacks pitcher Merrill Kelly, he went out there and did his thing. He pitched 7 innings with only 3 hits, 9 outs. Diamondbacks, that was the only game that they won, was game two. Game three, really could have gone either way. It was a low-scoring game. You know, neither team had really pitched well. Towards the end, Corey Seager for the Rangers scores a two-run home run, is what I wanted to say, which gave Texas the lead. And then, so they won that game 3-1. I remember that one. And then game four, Rangers dominated. They had 10 home runs. Max Scherzer was out. So obviously, he was banged up. But I mean, really, in a game like that, guys, when you're scoring 10 home runs, you know, whether you have good pitching or not is really not a question when your offense is clicking on all cylinders. And then game five, the Arizona starting pitcher, he did his job. His name was Zach Gallen. In six innings, he had six outs. But what's the name of the other team? The Diamondbacks. They didn't score a home run at all in game five. No home runs and no RBIs. Only five hits. So I'm looking at these two teams, guys. I think ultimately what you had a case here is the Arizona Diamondbacks barely snuck into the playoffs. I think that the Rangers here had the more star-studded team. They definitely had the higher firepowering offense because these blowout wins that you saw in this World Series Finals, let's face it, they gave the Houston Astros a couple blowout wins in the series prior. So, I mean, again, they definitely had the edge in terms of stars and being able to, have guys that were definitely more experienced. I can't remember where Corey Seager used to play for before. It might have been the Red Sox or the Dodgers. But I remember he was with another team. He was also very pivotal in a World Series win. I believe it was the Dodgers. I have to go back and check. But, you know, a little bit. This goes back to the same thing I mentioned to you before when I talked about my Phillies. It's understanding things that win World Series. It's great pitching and it's good hitting. You got to be able to hit. It's one or the other. If you can get both, it's a beautiful day. But you're going to need one. You're definitely going to need one. And I think that the Rangers definitely had the firepower offense in terms of being able to score and get the home runs, you know, and definitely had a couple of games here where they had great pitching, you know. So a little bit of both, I think, is really what aided to them here. You know, I give a lot of credit to the Diamondbacks. I think they gave it their best effort. However, like I said, stars are what makes the difference. You know, stars is what wins championships. Stars is what wins World Series. So a lot of credit given unto them. Jumping over to the NFL, Raiders head coach Josh McDaniels was fired earlier this week. I think it was on Wednesday. Interim head coach Antonio Pierce is coming in to serve coming in to serve as the interim coach. So Josh McDaniels, his tenure with the Raiders, guys, 20-33. This team has never reached the playoffs. Jimmy G leads the NFLs with 9 interceptions. This is the quarterback for the Raiders, okay? And you got a wide receiver like Davante Adams, who's pretty frustrated with the organization. Guys, there's no chemistry. There's no connection. Guys just don't seem motivated. That's it. This team just doesn't seem motivated. And, you know, and as I look at this issue, you know, I think one of the things that this is a good reminder of is so many people get enamored with this Belichick tree, this Belichick and Brady tree. So Josh McDaniels spent many years with the New England Patriots, winning championships with Brady and Belichick. You know, and I think sometimes people think a little bit of that championship DNA and that excellence will come over for any other person, any other team that they go to. And I think that this shows you just because Josh McDaniels was a great offensive coordinator with the Patriots, that doesn't necessarily mean that he translates into being a great coach. You know, look at the guys that have come from this tree. Joe Judge, Matt Patricia, who coached the Lions for a little bit. Josh McDaniels. None of these guys have really had great, illustrious careers from the time that they've left this Belichick tree. So I think, you know, it's tough. You know, you never wish for anybody to lose their job. But I think this also reminds you that, you know what, not everybody that's good at one thing will necessarily be good at the other. And I think you can even apply this to life. Everybody's got a niche. Everybody's got something they're good at. Everybody's got something that they're more skilled and gifted at. Whatever you're skilled and gifted at, first, and if you don't know, figure out what you're gifted at. When you find out what you're gifted at, you figure out who you can serve with your gift. And at the end of the day, you figure out how to put some money in your pocket with your gift. That's it. That's it. You know, and I think that this is a good reminder. Josh McDaniels, great as the offensive coordinator, not the greatest head coach. Not the greatest head coach. Not everybody that comes from this New England tree is going to produce the same results that they did when they were there. Simple as that. Simple as that. So they got their hands full being able to go forth and look for a new coach. Something else I wanted to touch on this week, guys. Head coach Bobby Knight passed away this week at 83 years of age. A well-renowned, recognized coach within the men's NCAA division or basketball, I should say. I didn't really have a chance to watch Bob Knight, guys. This is definitely before my time. So I had to take some time to do some research about him. just some things that I pretty much were able to just dig up. He was a three-time NBA champion, three-time NCAA champion. Coached at the University of Indiana. Also coached at Army before that. At Army, a key coach, head coach of, or former head coach of the Duke Blue Devils, Mike Krzyzewski, who just retired about a year or two ago. Coached him there at Army. Eventually coached the University of Indiana. He coached greats like Mike Woodson, who I know used to coach the Atlanta Hawks for some time, with Jeff Teague and Josh Smith. Also, Isaiah Thomas, who actually went on to the NBA, the great Bad Boy Pistons, with Bill Laimbeer and Dennis Rodman, all those guys. And Vinnie Johnson, the microwave, there's another guy I'm thinking about. So, looking at Bob Knight, guys, I didn't really, didn't have a chance to really watch him. I think the one thing that comes to mind is I think about coaching style. So they say Bob Knight was known as this archaic kind of guy. I mean, to the point where he got physical with players. He was headbutting guys and throwing chairs on the floor. I mean, literally, he was all the way live. This was Bob Knight. And what it kind of got me thinking of, it's just different coaching styles. You know, I look at some of that and I say, as crazy as it sounds, unfortunately, it actually would work for some players. You have some players that respond better with a more in-your-face kind of coach. Not everybody, but some players do. Like, you know, I think about myself. I can think about one of my coaches. His name was Glenn Dempster. He used to coach me when I played AAU basketball for the JKNBA Jaguars. And I remember this. I mean, when he was angry, he'd let you know he was angry. He was all in your face. He was yelling. He was screaming. I mean, he would get red. He was a white guy, so I mean, his skin would get red. I mean, this was his personality. But, you know, it was always to see the betterment of his players. It was never anything personal. He held you to a high standard. That was just the way he got down. I think of another coach I had, Greg Wilson. We used to call him Mookie. And just as laid back as anything. I can still remember him like it was yesterday. You go out there and you miss a shot. Mookie was in your face. Hey, man, come on, man. Put the ball in the basket, brother. Come on, man. That's exactly how he used to say it. Just like that. That was Mookie for you. And, you know, two different coaching styles. It may have worked for some people, Glenn Dempster would have been a great coach. For other people, Greg Wilson would have been better. I think about greats like Tony Dungy, who I believe before he won the Super Bowl with the Colts, I think it was the Jacksonville Jaguars he did an interview for, and I think he said he didn't get it. I could be wrong on this, guys, but I think he said he didn't get the job. And ultimately, one of the things they said is he's too quiet. He's too quiet of a coach. He doesn't yell. He doesn't get in your face. And those were some of the things that they critiqued him for that he does not do as a coach that they felt he needed to. And I say to myself, you know, again, Tony Dungy's coaching style made it work for some, but not all people. So it's an interesting concept. I did want to poll this question, guys, but I need to figure out how this poll thing works. I noticed my last question from my last episode on players, if players get paid too much, I'm not able to see where this question is being polled. It should be up on Spotify.com, but I need to look into it some more and try to figure things out, but I'll get to it. I definitely get to it. Even if not right away, I will follow up with you guys on that one. So yes, remembering head coach Bobby Knight, definitely thinking of him and his family, thinking of him and his family and his loved ones in this time at this season. All right, moving on into our last segment. It is the gold segment. It is my favorite segment. Again, for those of you guys that are new to the show, every time you sit down and you listen to this podcast, not only do we want to just sit around and talk about the sports and those who are excelling in their prospective games and things of that nature, but I want you guys to excel in life. So my goal is to always leave you with something uplifting, something positive, something you can apply to your day right now. Whether you're atheist, whether you're Islamic, whether you're tall, whether you're short, whether you played sports, whether you didn't play sports, whether you're skinny, it doesn't make a difference. It applies for everybody. That's my thing. I want it to be applicable for all people. So my subtitle for our goal segment today, guys, is stay ready. Stay ready. Simple as that. And the reason why I chose that, because I thought about something that I heard somebody saying this week. And it was based off of an old quote that you hear people say, that if you fail to plan, then essentially you plan for failure. And what are they trying to say? That not taking the necessary time to be intentional and organize what it is that you're going to do at a certain time or for a certain activity that you got to take care of. Essentially, you've already made a plan for failure by not planning, by not being ready. And I think about how many times have we missed out on opportunities in life simply because we're just not ready, simply because we haven't done our homework, simply because we haven't applied ourselves, we haven't done our research. So I just was reminded about the point that you should always be ready in every aspect. You work a certain, let's say if you're like myself, you work in a certain industry. I do a job that I enjoy, but not necessarily something I want to do forever. I have other things, other goals in my heart, different things I want to do with my life. And even though I may not necessarily be there today, I'm always looking up stuff to keep myself up to date. I would love to be able to do something like what I'm doing now on a full-time basis, where I get a chance to talk and share different things with you guys about what's going on in the world, what's going on in sports. I would love to do something like this more regular. You know, so one of the things that I can do is, one of the best things I can do for myself is keeping myself updated and educated on what's going on in the world, educated on what's going on in sports. Taking my time to do my research, understand, connect the dots. And at points I'm good, at points I'm not good. At points I can do better. So stay ready. It's a short one for you guys today. That's what I got for you. Stay ready. No matter what it is that you do, no matter what it is that you're preparing for, no matter what it is that you're looking to do with your future, stay ready. Whatever you can do to keep yourself active, stay ready. Think about an athlete. An athlete that wants to win an NBA Finals in June is not going to begin training in March of 2024. No, they're going to begin training June of 2023 to be ready by the time they get to June of 2024. You see what I'm saying? Stay ready. Stay ahead of your game. So that's what I got for you guys today. This has been 94 Feet. As always, hit the subscribe button. I will be back with more content. Gotta go for right now. As always, I will talk to you soon. I'm out.